Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
You know, if only the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Florida Panthers had some goaltending, this would be a good series.
Wow, you're going to start there.
Have you ever seen, and I don't have a great, like, birth of, I guess, games to refer to in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
But let me just say, so I'm down the street with some friends of mine, and we're watching this game, and I'm not sure that I've seen a game, certainly in the postseason, where the two goaltenders were better than they were in game two of this Florida Lightning series. And of course, you know, Florida prevailed in overtime 3-2. We can get into all of that. But honest to goodness, Steve, like, they're both great players, right? Sergei Bobrovsky and Andrei Vasilevskiy. But you talk about elevating your game. You talk about highlight reel saves. And at the end of the day, obviously, Bobrovsky won it, right, for Florida in overtime. But what a show. What a display of just elite clutch goaltending when it matters in the postseason to a level. Like, these guys are great all the time. This was a level that even for them, it was hard to fathom that they were making the saves they made.
Particularly that second half of the second period.
Yes.
The sprawling save by Bobrovsky, which...
That's the game.
Matt Dumba, right, did exactly what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Had he just slid it on the ice instead, it's a goal. But he elevates it, which is what you're supposed to do. And
which
Bobrovsky
is what you're
sprawls,
supposed to do.
And just tremendous. And then Vazzy
with his back to the shot. Like, he flips the forearm out and gets a piece of it.
Mm-hmm. Just tremendous. And then Vazzy was just save after save after save.
Unworldly.
You saw Kachuk looking to the sky and others just going, what do I got to do? That was quite a show that the Goldies put on Tuesday night.
It was incredible. And Kachuk, to your point, I don't know if they got the picture of this or not, but when he shoots and Vasi makes one of his unbelievable saves, he puts his stick behind his neck and just shakes his head. It's like, what have I got to do? And that, you know, epitomized the whole night. It was such an entertaining game. And yet, what did we talk about going into game two, right? Well, the Lightning need to get off to a better start, okay? Because so much zone time, they had one shot in the first 16 minutes, right, in game one, all of that. How does 2-0 strike you? I mean, come on, boys.
Well, 2-0 and 3 shots on net.
That's the thing, right?
3. You know, and as you said, they talked about we need a better start. We have to get a better start. You know, we've got to be more engaged at the start. And they came out with 3 shots on net. And a 2-0 deficit where Florida had 13 shots on net.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know, look, Florida's a dangerous team. They're going to put a lot of pressure on you. They're going to put a lot of pucks at net. They're a really good defensive team as well, so they're not going to give you a lot. So you got to go earn it.
Yeah.
And in the first period, the Lightning, once again, didn't match Florida's intensity, didn't match their level of play.
Nope.
Now, kudos to the Lightning in the second period. They turned it around.
They did. They absolutely did.
And they get the goal, 48 seconds in by Braden Point off the Duclair shot?
Mm-hmm.
And then they get a power play, and Stamkos from his office, which he is on a roll right now.
Well, and he got a little unlucky because he posted one that,
yes, he did,
you know, just outside the goal, and that could have gone, had it gone, it would have certainly changed the complexion of the game. But yeah, he's on fire. You get it to him in the right position, he does not miss. And and that, you know, when they tied it up, I really believe that the Lightning have momentum, even if it goes to overtime, all of that, right? But, it, like any NHL game that goes overtime, especially one that's not decided 3-on-3 and all that, it's a crapshoot in so many ways. And so now they're down 2-0, right? Listen, if they win this game, especially the way their goaltender played, I not only think that they're in tremendous shape because they've now, you know, earned home ice in a sense by getting one of the two games in Florida, but I think it's such an emotional lift because you've got the best goaltender in the world, and he basically stole you a game that might have. And they say in hockey there's really no carryover, and maybe there's not. But boy, you know, Florida would have gone to bed thinking, what do we have to do to beat this guy? And so from that standpoint, they were right there. Would have been so huge. Mm-hmm. Now, everything we said before this game, Steve, is still true. Until somebody wins a game on the road, this series has not begun, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if Tampa Bay comes back and wins game 3, now it's 2-1. If they win game 4, we're all even.
Yep.
And
then it's a best of 3 at that point.
Yeah. Does it sound like that's not going to happen? I don't think so. I don't think it's far-fetched because, you know, these games have been so close and so tight that maybe it's just getting back on home ice. Maybe it's that advantage, that little bit of juice that you get. I thought they played overall pretty well. You know what I mean? Like, it was, again, you don't want to fall behind 2-0. If I had one thing to say, it would be, you can't continually dig yourself a hole against a good team
mm-hmm.
in the postseason. You can't do it. You know, you scrap and you fight and you claw and then you get back and now, you know, it's in the third period and now it's in overtime. Where I thought that they had their best chance, Steve, and they had to get it done and they didn't, was when they had the 4-minute power yep. play.
That had you taken control of the game there, everything is probably different.
Then you can milk it. Then yep. you can play defense. You can play your system, all that stuff. Now you got the hammer, right?
Yep.
But that did two things. One, it didn't allow you to take control of the game. And two, it had to have given Florida an emotional lift when you kill off 4 minutes of penalty time.
No question about it. But then also, when you kind of knew that Florida was going to get the next penalty.
That's correct.
And they did.
Good point.
And yep. and good on Luke Lindenning for forcing Carter Verhaeghe to trip him or slash him 4 seconds That's into right. the power play.
That's right.
So Florida didn't get that power play, basically.
That's you know, right.
But that and those are key plays where Luke Lindenning's effort and hustle there kept the Lightning in that game. Didn't give them the 2-minute power play where you just kind of felt like, maybe they're going to score here. Like they'd killed off the 4 minutes, and now you know minutes later you get that the power play, and that's when you start to worry. And you know Lindenning forces that, and then you end up being you know scoreless or scoreless that period. You go to overtime 2-2, and
right.
Playoff overtime is a crapshoot.
It is. I mean, it really is.
And the Lightning have now amazingly lost 6 in a row in the playoffs in overtime and 10 of their last 11.
It's stunning.
And if you remember back in the 2020 bubble, they played a ton of overtime games and won, I think, all but one. On their Stanley Cup rings, it has the amount of time they spent in overtime because it was by far a record. Granted, when you start with a 5 overtime game in your
five
first.
5 overtime.
But they had lots of overtime games. That playoff bubble, and they won almost every one of them.
And now they're losing them. How do you account for that? Is that just some kind of anomaly right now that they're going through, or is it mental at this point?
Look, this is the first overtime game this year. They lost 3 mm-hmm. last year, but does that carry over into this overtime tonight? No. You know, maybe if you happen to advance in a couple series and you're just losing them all, although that's pretty hard to keep advancing if you're losing all your overtime games. But it's possible. You know, I just think it's, like I said, they're crapshoots. They're, you know, one good save, one bad break, one, you know, slip on the ice, one, you know, whatever it is. You know, it's all it takes. I mean, when it's a, you know, sudden death overtime, which is what it is, and there's no time limit, no 10 minutes or, you know, like, granted, the NFL's playoffs in the postseason doesn't have a time limit. But, yeah, it's kind of staggering that a team, especially with the goaltender and Andrei Vasilevskiy, has now lost 10 of 11 in overtime.
That's stunning. Mm-hmm. Stunning, even by his greatness. especially by his greatness. You would think that, you know, somehow he would, you know, prevail, stand on his head, whatever they say. Just hadn't happened for him. And that's, you know, to lose that many overtime games is really you can't explain it. I mean, I'm looking at this photo, and it's by the Associated Press. Wilfred Lee shot it. And you see Sergei Bobrovsky with his back turned to the action, to the ice. He's actually facing the net. And he's reaching back. And to see him make this save, you know, it was Duclair, right, I believe. It's unbelievable. I mean, it is the game. And when he made it, we kind of looked at each other and we just went, I don't know how he did that. Certainly there's some luck involved, but the effort to get back across the ice on an open net was, you know, you bury that, and it's not like Duclair did anything wrong, but you bury that and you're going to win the game. And so for as much as things didn't go great in the first period and all that, look, they were right there. They can play with these guys. It's an even series. Now, they absolutely have to hold serve at home for two games. That's the bottom line. You know, they cannot allow Florida to come in here and take one of the next two. So,
well, we've talked about this in years past. And look, there's no must-win games
it is a must-win. Yeah, until you get game three.
The Lightning now against a very good Florida team who plays great defense, but Bobrovsky's playing well, and they forecheck the hell out of you.
Yes.
You've got to win 4 out of 5 now. We've talked about that in years past, about when the Lightning took a 2-0 lead. Now you got to beat Vazzy 4 out of 5 to advance. Can you do it?
Yeah, 3 out of 4, 4 out of 5. It's impossible.
You know,
it's impossible.
You haven't lost a home game yet. So as long as you win those three, you just got to win one of the next two road games.
Right.
But you do have to win 4 out of 5 against that team. That is a tough task.
And that just seems, you know, too high of a mountain to climb. It just, especially with that goaltender, you know, especially with a guy that just doesn't give up anything. But that's why they play the games, and it was disappointing. And I thought when they tied it up down 2-0, I thought, okay, they've got the momentum. This might be their day. If they split here, they're in great shape coming home back to Amalie. And then poof, you know, that part of it's gone. So you can only attack the game ahead of you, and that's the one that's going to be on home ice. And so they have to hope that the crowd and other factors kind of carry them through. But again, it's not really a series. It's not as close as the scores are. That doesn't matter. You know, they're down 2-0, and they got to desperately find a way to get back in this series and win a game, their next game, you know, at Amalie Arena. So. But what an enjoyable game. What a great game to watch. If you love great performances, I mean, this was – I'm trying to think, Steve, you know, is it – what would be the equivalent in say, football? Is it Mahomes and Jared Allen going, you know, toe-to-toe?
I've seen some great games there.
Brady Manning, you know, like, like you're talking about, you know – I mean, you think about baseball, like, you know, I don't know. There's been so many great teams in the past, but it got the feel, you know, bird magic, right? It had this sort of back and forth, anything you can do, I can do better. Watch this. No, watch this. That's the beauty of sports to me, is when great players, and you know these are great goaltenders, they find another gear. They find another way to make this about their performance, and then somebody prevails at the end, right? This is epic to me. These two goaltenders played as well as they could play, and if you missed this game, you missed a lot, because they were special. They really were. And Vasi obviously had to save more shots than even Bobrovsky did.
So a couple of interesting things in the game as well. Max Crozier makes his NHL Stanley Cup playoff debut. And I thought he played well. Thought he accounted for himself very well on the ice. They went 11-7. And we know Nick Perbix was hurt. He didn't practice on Monday. But Tanner Jeannot was scratched. And as far as we know, healthy scratch.
Hmm.
And they were going 11-7. Now, maybe some of that was because you had Crozier playing and you were worried about that, and DeHaan was the other one, but I tend not to think so. I think they wanted to get Cooch and Point more shifts and to get them away from some of the Panthers' top lines
mm-hmm.
by double shifting them in that. But that Tanner Jeannot was scratched is very interesting. And I know he's a hot button topic for some fans who think it was a bad trade for him, and he has not lived up to what you had hoped he'd be when you traded for him and what you gave up. Some of it injury related, and he's had several injuries, particularly this year. But when he's played, he hasn't necessarily been as productive as maybe some fans had hoped. So it was just very interesting that he was the one scratched on Tuesday night's game. And then Victor Hedman, now tied for 10th defenseman in playoff history with 26 multi-point games, tying Jeez. Bobby Orr.
I mean, that's sick, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you got some players on here that are going to go to the NHL Hall of Fame. There's no question about it. And, you know, to start doing stuff like that with those names is sick. Look, the core of this team is still very capable, very dialed in, and, you know, we'll see, right? We'll see what happens in Game 3. I don't think it's going to be as easy in terms of, you know, are they going to get swept? No. This series is closer than maybe the 2-0 score would indicate. But they did let one get by them, and they had a pretty good chance to win. But even having said that, they still had to dig themselves out of a 2-0 hole to do that. So a little faster start, home crowd, all of that. We'll see if that is a big momentum booster for them. Meanwhile, the Tampa Bay Rays played game 2 of their series against the Detroit Tigers, which unfortunately they lost 4-2. And I thought that Ryan Pepiot was pretty good. You know,
gave up one solo home run.
Yeah, that was it. That's all he gave up. The Rays were actually winning that game until Colin Poche happened. And then he gives up a couple of bombs and three runs and in the eighth, and they wind up losing 4-2. So, you know, it's for the first time, I guess, since April 8th, the Rays dropped below 500. They're now 12-13. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned are you, Steve, that the Rays aren't very good? Or, you know, what's sort of your panic level at this point? Is it an 8? I'm good. Is it a 2? I'm really not sure, sir.
I'm not panicked.
Okay.
Because I think the lineup is shallow right now.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. hopefully you're getting Josh Lowe back soon, and you're getting some more bats back.
Yeah.
The bullpen has not been good, and I don't expect that to continue. Although,
right,
you're 25 games in now, you start to wonder if it's not as good as advertised.
Yep.
The starting pitching's been better than I anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
The worrisome thing is look, they're 12-13. And the bullpen's been a mess, and Randy Rosarena is posing at first base after a single to raise his average to 154.
I mean, seriously, that picture right there is worth 1,000 words. When Randy and Randy Land decide to go full pose after he makes it to first base, dude, like, I feel you, man. I've been in those slumps, but, man, you can't. You just can't. And so that's so epitomized what the Rays have been going through these first couple weeks of the season.
I mean, I joked with you, but both Yandy and Randy had a hit tonight and raised their average fairly significantly with one hit, like
1-for-5.
Like, you know, I think one Yandy, I think was 1-for-3 because he got a walk.
Oh yeah, he definitely raised.
Randy, I think, may have been 1-for-4, but that raised his average because he was batting 149 coming in.
Jeez, I mean, they face good pitching, it seems, every day, but, like, you know, at some point, you know, you got to start hitting the baseball. And
well, and they sat Jose Siri tonight to help him.
They did.
Probably for the kidney stone, some, but
what he does best.
But some of, they said they wanted to, you know, his bat and mental and, you know,
yeah,
refreshing at the plate. And then he came in and for defensive pinch hitting and struck out.
Doing Jose Siri things. Yeah. It's tough, man.
I mean, he's out KKing KK.
Oh man, you got to laugh because you'd cry, but it is unusual what, you know, what he's going through. And look, that lineup just doesn't work unless Diaz, and Rosarena are hitting, and I guess they both had some knocks, you know, the other night. Listen, are you going to win a lot of 2-1 games? I don't know. Am I surprised that Poche wasn't able to nail it down? All I know is that the Tigers at 14-10, and they've won 3 of their last 4 games, and it's their first series win at Tropicana since, get this, 2016. And so this is huge for them. Rays 12-13. First time they've been below 500 since April 8th. And they've lost 9 of 15 at Tropicana, where, you know, you remember a year ago, they were almost unbeatable. Yep. They won 30 out of 36 a year ago.
Look, so I think we'll really know how good this team is this weekend.
Yeah.
Because they're at the White Sox.
And the White Sox are not a good baseball team.
They have, three wins?
That's it. And if you can't get that done, then, you know, you're in trouble for the rest of it. But
yeah, they're 3-20.
Wow. That's bad ball. That's really bad. No, can't nobody be going to the games.
They're right on pace point. For 21 wins.
Jeez. I don't think that'll hold, but, you know.
21-141.
Woof. Usually you want to put the under-over like around 160.
Randy's batting average is 154 right now. I'm going to get this right. Hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Randy's batting average is 154.
Mm-hmm.
The White Sox winning percentage is 130.
Oh, man. You got to laugh to keep him crying. Yeah.
I mean, Colorado's bad.
Right?
They're on pace for 35 wins. I mean, they're smoking the White Sox.
In Colorado, I can attest, having been there first person, they're not a great ball club.
And the Marlins on pace for 39 wins. We have 3 teams on pace for less than 40 wins.
Hey, it's an all-Florida World Series. Yeah.
That is awful.
I know. Well, listen, they're going to have to turn it around. It's turning into a really lost sort of April for them. We're not that far from May. And you can't really lose a division necessarily in the first month. I guess you could if you only had, you know, a win or two, but they've got to figure it out, man. They're going to have to start scoring some runs. I mean, the constant is this team does not score very many runs.
No.
And somehow they got to figure that out.
No question about it. And you got to hope that some guys getting healthy.
Yep.
You know,
Josh Lowe.
You might see Junior Caminero up here sooner than they wanted to this season.
Sure.
He got hurt a little bit, and he's, you know, seems to be doing okay now. But I mean, they've got to do something.
Yeah, no,
I agree. Their offense. I mean, they don't have many choices at this point.
And they move guys like Rosario up, you know, in the lineup. They move other table setters, move Randy down to fourth. You know, the other day Yandy hit second. Now he hit first. Like, they're trying, man. They're trying some formulas, but nothing to this point, you know, has really, really worked.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So we are just one day, that's right, one day from the NFL draft. Welcome to the NFL draft. From Detroit, and you know, I haven't really, like, this is a quarterback draft, right? We've talked about how many is I don't know, maybe six could go in the first round. I don't think that's exaggerating. And we'll see if any of them tumble to number 26. That'll be quite an interesting decision. Having said all that, we've talked about how, you know, to me, the Bucks need to address either the offensive or defensive line. Don't know how the picks are going to fall, but we know that, you know, they never really adequately replaced Ryan Jensen or Ali Marpet. This is the worst rushing team in the last 2 years. So, you know, just sort of need would kind of steer you that way, I think. Having said all of that, and we've talked about needing an edge rusher the other day, and how guy like Jared Verse would make sense for Florida State if he were still there. That remains true as well. But what I would say to you is this. At some point in this draft, whether it's the first pick at 26 or somewhere thereafter, the Bucks have to address the wide receiver position, in my opinion. Back in 2014, Mike Evans was a rookie, right, out of Texas A&M, wide-eyed, all that, right? And what's interesting about that is, flash forward 10 years, now Mike Evans is going to be, when the season starts, 31 years old. You know who was 31 when Mike Evans got here? Vincent Jackson. And Vincent would wind up enjoying his fourth straight 1,000-yard receiving season and his sixth and seventh year. I mean, he was on a roll, man. And Tom was so sort of pass-centric in his offense and his philosophy and all of that, that I think really Evans credits, you know, the mentoring that he got from guys like Jackson. And so now you look at it and you go, well, Mike Evans is going to be 31. Isn't it time for him and Chris Godwin to usher in the next generation of receivers? And while I appreciate the fact that, you know, they have drafted some guys over the last couple of years, Trey Palmer being one. Look, Trey was a sixth-round pick, and I'm not saying they can't make it because they do all the time. Having said that, he had 39 catches for the year for 385 yards and three touchdowns. Now, some of them were spectacular, but you're talking about wanting a big step up from those numbers. And then Devin Tompkins, who's really been used primarily as a kickoff or kick returner, only has 23 receptions for 115 yards and a touchdown in his past two seasons. So he's not a guy that's been in the mix very much before. And, you know, I think even though Mike Evans is signed for the next 2 years and you're going to guarantee him, what, $100 million or whatever, those are going to go by fast. And sooner than later, you're going to want to run a similar offense or whatever, but you've got to find the next two franchise receivers. And Chris is a free agent. Love him. He's beat up. I don't know if he comes back to Tampa Bay. Mike, you know, is here 2 years. This is the time to find that high volume catch guy that, you know, in Liam Cohen's offense, he's going to use three receivers all the time. That's his game plan, right? One running back, three receivers. So you might as well get yourself in position for that. And, you know, I think that's something that they'll have to consider very strongly when they get to pick number 26. I still believe that it's going to be an offensive or defensive lineman, probably a center if one of their guys are there. We'll have to wait and see how that goes. But check out the story on TampaBay.com and the Tampa Bay Times as well, basically about how the time is now, it really is, for the Bucks to find those successors to Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Because, folks, I don't believe they're here. Whoever they are, whether it's a trade, draft, free agency, whatever, I think they need to begin to find that next guy or a group of guys that'll emerge together as a tandem in this receiving corps. And again, both Mike and Chris, very productive. Both will probably go over 1,000 yards if they stay healthy, all of that. That's great. But what better opportunity to come in here and be that third receiver for a year or so? And then when it's handed to you, you're ready to go. So pretty interesting scenario. There are some good receivers in this draft, particularly the ones that will be pushed down because of all the quarterbacks going. I think as many as six could go in the first round, and that'll be something to watch too. If a quarterback is there at 26, do they trade out? How much does their phone ring? Is it even a consideration that they would take one? But the draft, just a day or so away, it's incredible how fast this rolls around. And I'm anxious to see sort of, you know, what happens. Caleb Williams goes to the Bears, sure. And then number two, I think I know Jaden Daniels is going to take that job, but I'm not entirely sure. And then after that, your guess is as good as anybody's, to be honest with you. So the NFL draft just a day away. The Tampa Bay Rays wrap up their series against the Detroit Tigers. And the Lightning return home on Thursday night to play at Amalie Arena, down 2-0 to the Florida Panthers. But as we know, they hold serve. They win their two home games. This is going to be a series that's going to go maybe six or seven games. So we'll have to see how that all plays out. Appreciate you guys listening. Of course, every Monday through Friday, we're here. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.